KRWG's Gardening Confidential is brought to you by Fun Country RV and Marine. Lithium batteries on RVs as standard equipment. Continuous operation with solar, lithium packages for campers. Batteries provide a 15-year lifespan. El Paso RV Show March 15th through the 17th at the El Paso Convention Center. By Las Cruces Home Builders Association. The 2019 Home and Garden Show is presented by Suntech Services Incorporated. Saturday, April 13th from 9 to 5 p.m. and Sunday, April 14th from 10 to 4 p.m. at the New Mexico Farm and Ranch Museum. Well, spring has sprung. Hi, I'm Edmundo Resendez, your host, and it is time for KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Call in right now at 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or join us on our social media desk where we are live streaming the show on Facebook. What makes your desert garden grow? Whether you have a green thumb or would like to have one, Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Service at NMSU is our special guest, and he is here to offer tips on how to be a successful gardener in our region. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift certificate courtesy of Guzman's Color Your World Garden Centers with two locations in Las Cruces. Thank you to Gary Guzman for supporting KRWG Public Media. Well, here we are, Jeff. It is spring, or is it spring?
Well, they call it meteorological spring, so it's not actually the March 20th, the official equinox, but yeah, we're into spring.
All definitely. Right, so how has the weather been in this early, you know, winter of January, February? You know, I started seeing some folks on social media were showing their tulips were already sprouting. How tricky is it right now for these plants to realize that it's not officially spring?
Well, there isn't really anything we can do about it. Mm-hmm. These plants are from different parts of the world where the spring comes in differently. So once their winter dormancy is satisfied, that's the number of chill hours they need, they're going to bloom and there's nothing we can do to stop them. But the only thing we can do is just enjoy them.
And one of the things you suggested was to be prepared to have plants that you can cover.
Yes. So if you grow some smaller things, I grow some different citrus trees here in Las Cruces, believe it or not. But in the wintertime, I'll throw a tarp over them. Okay. A lot of things are cold hardy down to about 18 degrees, and that just that breaking point. Every year we hit 18, but a lot of times we never even get there. So being prepared and to cover up your plants like that, the tender ones.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. We are taking your calls and social media questions. Michael Kasmerick is standing by the social media desk, ready to hear from you, so you can tune in and ask your questions on social media. As I mentioned, we have a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World for all. We have a drawing for everybody that calls in and asks their questions on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Again, 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212. One of the earlier questions that I had on social media was regarding some good flowering plants to plant that are perennials and some that they can enjoy throughout the summer. What are some good plants for our region?
Okay, so I'll try to go through this pretty quickly. Okay. So in the spring, you can enjoy forsythia, the flowering quince right now. They're all in bloom and looking great. There's flowering almond, and there's several other spring-type bushes, remembering that these need water. These are not native to here. Getting into the summer months, we might get into some different viburnums, and, of course, the vitex. They get pretty large, vitex do. And then we've got some, let's see, we had some honeysuckle in the spring. So it's kind of hard to have summer blooming shrubs. Generally, they're more green. So most shrubs bloom early in the spring, or they're going to bloom in the fall.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. We are able to answer your questions on what are some good plants for the region. Are you having trouble with some of your plants and would like Jeff Anderson to offer some tips and some advice? Give us a call, ask your questions, or join us again on social media where we are live streaming the show. Say hello, Jeff.
Hello there.
All right. So what do we have here that you brought in today?
So these plants I actually picked up at Guzman's Color Your World Greenhouse. So we have the white one is alyssum, and that's fairly cold hardy around here in the spring, so it can take some light frost. Then we've got two different things of marigolds.
Marigolds.
They don't take cold at
all. They don't take cold.
So they're starting to get them out, but these are the kind of things you could put into a pot right now and get going and just cover them up with a blanket if it's going to get too cold.
And so marigolds, this is something that my mom grew in Houston, and they would just take off like a weed.
Exactly. A lot of people, I'm from Minnesota originally, and we grew marigolds up there in the summer, and they were beautiful. Marigolds are pretty tough. They're native to Mexico.
575-646-2212. And tell me about this plant there.
This is an oxalis, sometimes mistakenly called a shamrock plant.
That's what I was thinking, yes.
Kind of looks like that, but it's actually an oxalis. And they're mildly cold hardy. They will survive over the winter here fairly decently. If it gets super cold, they can freeze out. But they go dormant, basically, in the winter. And right now, they're coming up and starting to grow.
Okay. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation. Or you can join us on social media where we have Michael Kaczmarek ready to hear from you. What about vegetables? That's a very common question I know you get. People have challenges with different vegetables. I've had very good success with zucchini. And yeah. It seems that every summer on social media, I've got friends that are showing off their pictures of giant zucchinis. Is it healthy to let them grow that big, or should we cut them off at a certain point?
Generally, you want to harvest your zucchini when they're about 8 to 10 inches long. The longer you leave them on the plant, the more woody they're going to get, because they're going to seed. So that seed is going to develop. The seed's going to get hard, so you're not going to be left with much to eat on the inside. So every year at the Southern New Mexico State Fair, we get the giant vegetable, and usually it's a zucchini, but most of the time they're not edible.
Oh, yeah, that's what I thought. All right, let us go to our phone lines where we have Mark. Mark, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind, sir?
Thank you. So my wife and I bought a home last fall, and our backyard is pretty much completely overtaken with wild arugula. And so my question is, what's the best way to get rid of it, and what grass might you recommend we plant to take back our yard?
Okay, a variety of questions there. So okay. How do you get rid of arugula? Generally, if you're going to be organic, you can spray it with vinegar. You can chop it down with a hoe. Hoeing it down is the most organic way you can possibly do it, pulling it out with your hands, hoeing it down. There's some corn gluten you can use if you want to be organic. And after that, then you're going to start getting into chemical use. And I know people don't like to talk about Roundup, but Roundup is effective. But generally, you should try going out there and hoeing it down as well. But okay. I'll also say, if you start early enough in the spring, like April for the summer weeds and around the end of September for the winter weeds, you can use a pre-emergent herbicide.
Gotcha.
And what was your question about grass? What to plant?
The kind of grass.
Yeah.
So if it's in full sun, generally the most common one used here is Bermuda grass, something like a Tiff Green or Sahara or Princess. Then you have fescue grasses, and they're generally almost pretty much evergreen here, almost evergreen. They get a little yellow in January, and those are real popular. After that, then you have some native ones like buffalo grass and grama grasses, or if you really worked at it, you could do St. Augustine grass, which is from St. Augustine, Florida, kind of near that area. They use it a lot.
Sure. Wonderful. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Mm-hmm. 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Let us go to Amy. Amy, welcome. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm interested in doing some raised beds to raise some vegetables, and I've never done it before. What do you recommend to fill the beds with, and what vegetables do you recommend starting with, especially with a lower water ratio?
I have a friend who tried raised beds 4 years ago and was very successful.
Mm-hmm. Around here, some of the most successful gardens outside of our farming fields that we do on a more commercial basis, some of the most successful ones I've seen are raised beds. Basically, what you want to do is build a really good, strong framework because it's got to hold the whole thing together. So once you get that built, and I can do a little example. I work out at the Southern New Mexico Correctional Facility helping to teach gardening just like this out there. And we build raised beds out of pallets. So we turned the pallets on their side, lined the inside with plywood, and then filled them up basically out there because of where you're at and you can't haul a lot of stuff in there. We filled them up with the native soil and then improved that with a peat moss type solution mix into there. But if you're going to fill it up at your own home, what you can do is, if you can get, you know, it can be really expensive depending on the size of the raised bed that you're doing, but filling it with, the city gives away free compost, mix that with sand, and then towards the top of the mix, when you're filling it up, then you can use a better, like, garden soil or compost that's a little finer. Sometimes the city compost has sticks in it, but get a finer compost where the vegetables are actually going to grow into it.
All right. Did I answer your question, Amy?
Yeah, that was part one. Would you mind recommending some good vegetables to start with?
Thank you
for that on the raised beds.
You mean for the spring, like right now, or for the whole year?
Probably now and then summer and fall. I probably won't do much in the winter.
Okay, I'll make some general recommendations. So any of the cole crops, C-O-L-E, that's cabbage and cauliflower and all that, do you want to plant from July onward? So you want to reserve some space in your bed so that you can plant July. And you say, why? Because in the fall, as you're going into fall like that, if you plant too late, you're going to have a smaller vegetable at the end. By planting in July, the plants will grow vigorously, they'll grow large, and by the fall, you'll have a big harvest there.
Hmm.
And they'll be sweeter, because if you plant cole crops in the spring, you go into the summer, they get more peppery and hot. So right now, because we're going into summer, you need to think about tomatoes. Cherry tomatoes are going to be your most consistent bearing. The larger the tomato, the less tomatoes you're probably going to get, if you get any, depending on certain varieties. Peppers. If you don't like hot peppers and you do like a bell pepper, try and do the mini bells, because the mini bells sit under the foliage and they won't get sunburnt. So then, of course, your zucchinis, you can do carrots now, you can do radishes right now. Anything in particular you're looking at that you want to grow that?
No, I'm just looking for your best recommendations.
Okay, on our Doniana County website, we have a link to the Master Gardener page. And on that page, we have a planting recommendation by one of our Master Gardeners, Daryl Schillenberg, put together.
Okay. 575.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. It is KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Our special guest is Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. He is here to offer tips on how to have a successful garden this summer, this fall, and beyond. You can join us on social media, where Michael Kaczmarek is standing by, ready to hear from you. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. Let us go to our social media desk, where Michael Kaczmarek has been standing by. Michael, what are people talking about on social media?
Hey there. How's it going, Edmundo?
It's going great.
Great. Well, I've got DeVary here, who wants to know what picking flowers can be grown in New Mexico in the summer.
Picking flowers in the summertime. One of the most popular ones around here is zinnias. They hold up well. They're easy to grow. They like the summer heat. If you can get into late summer, some of the taller marigolds, especially for Dia de los Muertos.
Dia de los Muertos.
So, you know, growing marigolds can be real popular around here. So in the summertime, there's a number of ones in the spring, like larkspur, penstemons. You could do penstemons. So it's a little harder to keep flowers here in the summer when it's really hot. Sunflowers, there are some summer blooming sunflowers that'll bloom all summer long.
Okay.
Great. We've got another one here. It's from Mary, who says that she wants to plant some California poppies. Where's a good place to plant them? And she looks like she's in the Lordsburg area, where she says the soil is rocky and clayish.
Rocky and clayish. So the California poppies or Mexican gold poppies, which are the native ones here, they do really well in sandy, well-drained soils. So as long as the soil is well-drained, that's the key important thing, and then having a little bit of moisture. But generally, those seeds are sown in September with moisture late in the fall. They come up and they'll form a rosette all winter long and then go to bloom in the spring. So sowing them right now, if you were thinking about that, is not a really good idea. It's kind of past that season. But a sandier type soil.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. We've got lots of calls, Jeff. A lot of people really excited about summer coming around, spring being here. Lori, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind?
Yes, I am in the process of building a little casita, and I live behind a mountain in the desert, and so I won't have a protective wall. And I'd like to plant some Orlanders out there, and I'm wondering, I have a lot of wildlife, you know, deer, I've got some javelina, jackrabbits. Will they eat those?
So that's always a good question about oleanders. And we get asked that all over town because people have pets and that. Generally...
I'm wondering, will they destroy them? I mean, and they're poisonous. I know that.
No, they shouldn't bother them. The oleander leaf itself has a compound in there that's extremely bitter. So when people eat it, it induces a gag reflex, everything like
gotcha.
That. So unless the leaf is dry, when it's dry, it no longer has that property of making
gotcha.
You gag. So, but generally, there's been almost zero reports of anybody over thousands of years being poisoned by oleander.
Okay, all right.
All right, thank you, Lori.
So wildlife, you think they might eat one?
I don't think so. They're not going to eat it.
So?
No.
Okay, that was my question. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Our social media is burning up. We're going to go to our social media desk in just a bit, but we've got some more calls coming in. Gina, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. You are on with Jeff.
Hello.
Hi, Gina.
Me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question. I live in El Paso, so I'm trying to...
We're losing you, Gina. Okay, well, she is on a cell phone, and we encourage you to call us back, Gina, at 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. It's live radio, Jeff, and we can expect that to happen. Jeff Anderson is here to talk about gardening in the desert. Let us go to Pete. Pete, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Yes, my question involves Texoca buffalo grass lawn. I'm at 6,100 feet. In Silver City, and I have a lot of dead plant material within the lawn. Should I rake that up?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes. On a buffalo grass lawn like that, every so often on the prairie, the fires would burn and clean out all that dead material in there. So if you're getting a lot of debris built up in your buffalo grass, it's a good idea to rake it out and use it somewhere else.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Pete. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. John, welcome to KRWG's Garden Confidential. You are on with Jeff. John.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling from El Paso, and I've tried to raise tomatoes for years, and I just, you know, they quit setting in the hot sun, and I've gone to the Texas agricultural people here, and they recommended a Typhoon hybrid. I tried that and it still didn't work. Do you guys have a good hybrid or recommendations for tomatoes that will give fruit during our hot summers?
Well, that's a very difficult one. If you want to have a consistent tomato production through the summer, I would recommend growing cherry tomatoes. They're not the big beefsteak. They're not even the medium sandwich ones. They're small, but at least you're getting tomatoes through the summer. With that, I would try a medium tomato. The bigger the tomato, it's more difficult going to be to produce a big tomato. So going with something a little small, like a 3 to 4 ounce tomato, and some of them like Mortgage Lifter, Sioux, Heat Wave, some of those that are known for standing up to the heat and been bred a little more towards that direction. There's also one called Costoluto Genovese. It's an Italian one. So some of the Italian-type tomatoes do better here.
Okay, well, I'll try those.
Okay, thanks.
Good luck. A lot of people are definitely struggle with tomatoes.
Yes.
What do you recommend?
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
If you want good tomatoes, and if you can find a variety that's going to produce through our summer heat, then the next key ingredients are having good, rich, organic soil that doesn't have a lot of nitrogen in it, and then consistent watering. So if you want to get a big tomato, you can't water today and then, and I know what the city says, every 3 days mm-hmm. or 2 days there, the third day, but by that time that it's dried out and the skin toughens up and then you give it water and then they split and they get diseases or they don't grow at all. Because once the fruit shuts down in its growth due to water, it takes time for it to get activated again to start growing. So you go through that constant cycle up and down. And so if you want good tomatoes, consistent water.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential, Jeff Anderson is our guest. He is here to answer your questions. Let us go to Sylvia. Sylvia, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Hi there.
Yes, ma'am.
My question is, I'd like to put in a ground cover in the front patio, but most of the time it has, it's pretty sunny there. It has some shade in the early morning. And I was over at Guzman's and I really couldn't find anything other than cool or shady ground covers. But one of the persons that was there recommended thyme. So I'm asking Jeff if you've had experience with thyme as a ground cover.
I have not had experience with thyme as a ground cover per se. I've had it spread out and work out well. It does better in cooler areas like towards Albuquerque and Santa Fe. It's really popular up there. If you can manage it, it probably could work out here. Probably not as well as up north, but it could work, especially if you're in a sandy soil. So you got good air movement through there and then periodic watering.
Well, what else would you recommend?
That is a difficult question. It's difficult to come up with ground covers here, the proper ones. I know my neighbor just put in Vinca Minor. So Vinca Major gets really large and can mound up to about a foot and a half tall. But uh-huh. Vinca Minor stays very low.
But it requires shade.
It could grow partly into the sun. So it's not, it doesn't have to have full shade all the time. It will adapt to a sunny bit of sun there. So if you're only having a limited amount in the morning, that would be probably a good choice there.
Minor.
And if it's, is it a big area?
No, it's not a huge area, but it's not just like an 8x8 space.
Yeah, and it's a whole matter. If you could supply water to that area on a regular basis, there are some things that stay small, grow in the shade like that. There's a monkey grass, they call it. It's a small, tiny, not really grass. It's a sedge, and it can be plugged in there. You can create designs with a number of different ground covers like that that are really small.
Uh-huh.
But those generally tend to take more water, too, or consistent water, put it that way.
Yeah. I had buffalo grass in there, but it got, unattractive, I guess.
Right, yeah.
And so I pulled all of that out.
Yeah, if you want to come by our office sometime, we can sit down and talk about this.
Okay, that sounds good.
Where's your office located? Where can people get a hold of you?
Our office is in the County Department of Health building, and that's 1170 North Solano. And we're in Suite M, so that's on the ground floor on the right side of the building, which is the south, on all the way to the back.
All right, 575-646-2212. Or join Michael Kasmerick on our social media desk where he is standing by. Let us welcome back Gina. Gina, you are on with Jeff Anderson. Let's hope we don't lose you this time.
Yes, I am. Hi.
All right, let's go.
Hi. Yes. I'm looking to plant some hydrangeas. It's a beautiful flower, but I've only seen them like at Albertsons and I've never seen them on anybody's yards or, you know, or plants. Do they grow in El Paso at all?
So, you could grow hydrangeas here, but we're in the desert. That's why you don't see them out there. They're not the most drought-tolerant plants. The leaves are very thin. So, you know, they like conditions like that you occur in Oregon. That's their favorite condition. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, a lot of them, you see they're pink or they're blue, and they're only blue if the soil is acid, and ours is very alkaline. But I've seen hydrangeas around in protected areas, kind of part shade, where people kind of dote over them. But they're not the kind of thing you can just go out and put it in the front of a desert yard here and think it's going to be okay. It won't work out.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. I've seen them at, because I know they're selling them at Sam's, and then they have them there.
Right.
And, you know, you take them home, and I still have leaves growing, but I have no flowers.
Yeah.
What about oranges? I have an orange tree.
Right.
It gives me big oranges, but they're not sweet. What should I add to that?
So oranges and grapefruit and that develop their sweetness with the amount of heat. So you need to have it outside in a nice, really warm place, and that's what develops the sweetness to them.
Okay. So should I add anything to them? I mean, I've already gotten fruit like 4 years in a row, and they're not.
They're coming out bitter?
Yes, yes.
Are you picking them too early?
No, I mean, they come out in the wintertime. That's when they grow.
So I'm thinking they probably aren't getting enough sunshine, and so you're getting probably some bitter properties there. I'd have to look it up.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
But then I can look you up online, right? I mean, I can
absolutely
look up your...
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Gina.
Thank you very much.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It.
Good luck. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential, I'm Edmundo Resendez. Our guest is Jeff Anderson with the NMSU Extension Service. Let us go to Jeff. Jeff, welcome. You are on with Jeff. With Jeff.
Hello.
Jeff and Jeff.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi, how's it going? And my question real quick. Last year I bought a house late February, and we went and bought an apple tree from Home Depot, I believe. So it's a little sapling, but it did fruit like 7 apples, I think, last year. And we had some critter that came and took like 6 of them, but so we ended up with 1 apple. But my question is, do I need to get another apple tree in order for it to bear fruit again?
In the technical aspect, it's yes, because most apples aren't self-fruitful. But if your neighbors have apples and the bees are around, those are the two most important things, then you wouldn't need another apple.
Okay, and that's the thing is, I don't know if any of my neighbors around here have an apple tree.
Exactly.
So I probably would have to get one then, right?
Yeah, it's probably a better idea to get better quality apples is to have two different varieties.
Okay, and as far as distance from the apple tree that I have planted, does it matter? I mean, I have it in the backyard. Can I put it in the front?
Generally, if they're both in the backyard, that's better, because then the bees will go from one to the other and pollinate it that way. If they're in the front yard and backyard, then you can't always tell if the bees are actually making that trip.
Wow, okay. All right. Well, that was my question. I appreciate your help.
Thank you, Jeff. 575-646-2212. Let us go to David. David, you are on with Jeff Anderson. Welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Thank you very much, Jeff. My wife and I recently moved here from the southeast, where it is very lush, green, and wet.
Right.
And we are very interested in composting and recycling everything we can. So my question is, how do you compost in the desert? And also, the second question is, do you have earthworms here?
Well, I'll answer the second one first.
I buy earthworms for fishing.
Yes, we do have earthworms. Generally, they start multiplying your soil once you take care of it. And if you feel a need, you can always order them online. That's pretty easy there.
Okay.
So the first question was
What was your first question again?
Yeah.
How do you compost in the desert?
Oh, compost in the desert, yes. So composts are basically three things. You need the stuff you're composting, and that should be a mixture of green material like grass clippings and brown material, because that helps the decomposition process. So that's the first thing you need. Of course, a place to put it and be able to turn it over. So the reason to turn it is to keep aeration in it. And the third thing is moisture. Well, there could be four things. So you got moisture, and you got to make sure there's sufficient nitrogen there for the microbes to feed on to break that compost down. So generally, if you have green material in there, it should have sufficient nitrogen in that green material to for the microorganisms to work with. So,
okay. So you're saying basically it's the same as it is anywhere. You
right.
just probably have to add more moisture in the desert.
Right. You have to make sure that it doesn't dry out, because if it dries out, it's just going to sit there like a lot of things here.
Right.
And slowly okay. decompose. But
I had a very successful year with composting 1 year. I mean, it was great, and it really, I saw my garden really blossom with it.
Yep.
So, yeah, you can have success great. In the desert, sir.
Wonderful. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you, David. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential, I'm Edmundo Resendez, your host. With me is Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. Jeff, so if people have questions, they can come to you and ask them, but also in different counties, there's an extension service.
Exactly. So there's an extension office in every county. Hopefully there's an agent because people get older and retire and that, so there can be turnover. But there should be an agent currently, I think, in every county. We're fully filled, I think,
okay.
at the moment.
All right, let's go to our social media desk where Michael Kasmarek has been standing by. Michael, what are people saying on social media?
I've got a question, Edmundo and Jeff, from Mark, who wants to know, can you grow a bonsai tree here that thrives in this climate?
I'd say yes. Just picking the right plant material. And so you can look at desert plants and see how they would work for planting. I think one of the ones that comes to my mind is turpentine bush. It's native here. It has small leaves. It can have this real rugged characteristic bark looking on it. And it's added benefit in the fall. It flowers with yellow flowers on it. And you wouldn't have to worry about bringing it inside.
Oh, very cool. Well, and I've got another one here from Andrew, who wants to know, what was the average last freeze or frost for the Alamogordo Las Cruces area? And what's the average time length?
Okay, the average, let's say, first freeze that started in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
When I first moved here, it was around November 3rd, and I've heard it's as early as into October 28th, 27th in that area. Generally, that's down by the river. And then the last freeze was generally around the 1st of April. Sometimes it's earlier. So people that live within the city, I haven't had a freeze at my house since back in February. And my first freeze can be all the way into December before I have a first freeze sometimes. Generally the end of November.
End of November?
But for most people, it's going to be, they say, the first week of October, or first week of November, and the first week of April.
April?
Right.
Okay, goes all the way into April. Okay.
Yep.
575-646-2212. Michael Kasmarek is standing by the social media desk. Again, all calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift card, gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. That way you can go out there and see what kind of plants you'd like to plant. If you have questions as to what plants you're planning on planting this spring in your garden, ask Jeff Anderson. We've got Travis standing by. Travis, thank you for being patient. What's on your mind, sir?
Well, my question is this. Actually, it goes back to the question about composting. I'm trying a Bokashi composting system. It's a pickling system that I read about from the Northwest. And I'd just like to have any comments you have on that, using that. I'm using it now, but using that here in the desert.
I haven't had any personal work or work with anybody that's using that system. I've heard of it, but I have not seen anybody.
What's involved in the system? What's involved in it, Travis?
The gist of it is as I've read about it, you can use just about anything in the composting. You use a 5 gallon bucket. It's an anaerobic system rather than an aerobic system. It's in two parts. One, you throw almost everything instead of just greens in to the bucket. And it cooks, if you will, for a couple of weeks. And then you bury it in the garden in a row. I've got raised beds. And it finishes composting. And it looks to me like it's just disappearing very quickly.
Right. So
in the garden bed.
Anything that works with composting, you know, there's a lot of different types around. That I do I compost as brush piles. So I chop everything up and I just put it right in the garden and I let nature work at it from the bottom down. And so it's like a mulch. And that and yeah. The other one is like at the city. So the city provides a free compost where they actually turn it, mix it, make sure there's enough moisture and it breaks down. And we have that available. And then we have the type that you were just mentioning with the fermenting process. So, yeah, many different types. But they're all beneficial.
Okay.
All right, Travis. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
We'll have a fall edition. Give us a call in the fall when we have the fall gardening confidential and let us know how it worked out for you. All right. Thank you, Travis. Let us go to our another call. We've got Claire, who has been standing by. Claire, you're on with Jeff on KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Yes. I've been trying to grow red bird of paradise in my yard. I live up just east of Telshore, so we're kind of desert landscaping. And it dies every year. And maybe it's not dead, and I think it is because it looks dead.
Yeah, you may think it's dead. It's interesting that the red bird of paradise, sometimes called the Mexican bird of paradise, is actually native to eastern Mexico into the Caribbean. And it seems so strange that a plant like that could grow out in the desert here in our colder climate. But yeah, that particular one will freeze back to the ground pretty much every year.
Mm-hmm.
And you just trim it off, and it comes right back up and seems to just love being in our climate here.
Well, I see beautiful ones all over my neighborhood, mm-hmm. So that's why I've been trying to grow it.
It takes time to get them established. If you start out with the biggest plant that you can afford, that's a better way to start. But most of us start smaller, and it takes time to get
so
the mass of the plant.
Trim it back now?
Yes. Go ahead and trim it back.
Okay. Right down to the ground?
Right down to the ground.
And water absolutely. It like every week or more often?
Water it sparingly. You know, give it some water right now and then water it sparingly because it doesn't have any green tissue so much to transpire the water. So you don't want to overwater it and cause it to rot. So just a little bit of water.
Okay. Very good.
All right.
I'll try. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Claire. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. We have open lines, so if you've been waiting and you've got a busy signal, now is the time to call in and ask your question to Jeff Anderson on what makes your desert garden grow. We are live streaming the show. Say hi, Jeff, to all the folks that are watching us on KRWG's Facebook page. If you want to, you can like us on our Facebook page, and that way you can follow us on Facebook and see the beautiful plants that Jeff has brought in. Jeff, let's talk about your garden.
Okay.
What do you grow in your garden? Last year, I posted a picture of your garden, a before and after. What part of town do you live in, and what was the first thing you did in order to have a successful garden?
So I live in the Alameda Historic part of the city here. So I like old homes, and I like working with them. So I found a good house that I like with a Mediterranean style. My most prevalent plant in the whole garden are palm trees, and it's because I love palm trees.
I had a question about palm trees. They're so popular in my neighborhood. It's lined up with palm trees, but when we had that freeze a couple years back, they were new palm trees, and they died.
Right. So they're in the Washingtonia genus. And there's only two in it. One's a Mexican fan palm. One's a California fan palm. The Mexican fan palm comes from Baja California, where the California fan palm actually extends all the way into central Arizona and into some of the higher elevation areas and that. So it's much more cold hardy.
What are those big palm trees? What are the ones we see around town that are real tall? I'm thinking of the Las Palmas hotel.
Yes. Those are, you know, it's really hard to have a purebred Mexican fan palm, but they have more of that genetics into them.
Ramada palms.
So the Mexican fan palm's leaves are only cold hardy to 22 degrees, and usually every year we hit 18. So they're going to get browned every year, but they grow really fast. They grow back. So that's their big selling point is they're fast growing. But there are other palms around that are very cold hardy.
All right. So what else do you have in your garden? You said you had some citrus.
I have citrus. I have lemons. Actually, they've starting to put on some growth right now. I have lemon, Meyer lemon. I actually have a Barris lime, and I have tangerines. and citronella, which is actually one of the cold hardy citrus, down to about 5 degrees. And I have Arctic Frost, which is a mandarin orange, and it's been bred for cold down to 10 degrees.
Let's talk about glass cover that you use. What are advantages to that? And can you explain what that is?
So the glass, the city recycles glass. So they take in clear glass, blue glass, brown glass, and green glass, and we separate it out at the city facility there. When I say me I or us, it's the public. So you drop it in the right bins. But the city takes that glass, and then they crush it down. So they call it cullet. And it's little pieces of glass. And then they give that away free. They also give the sandy particles away free, too. But they give it away free, and you can use it however you want in a landscape. So I've hauled about 30 tons of it to my yard.
30 tons?
30 tons, yes. And it's really heavy, and it takes a lot of effort. And I didn't do it all in one day. It took me several years. But I got it all spread out all over my yard. And what's nice about it is that it's like rock. It's glass, so it's not absorbing anything or giving really anything off. It's just organic. And then water, rain goes through it and gets trapped underneath the glass if you put it thick enough. And then that, if you think about it, that's trapping water into your soil for your plants in your yard to grow on. So that's a really big benefit of it. And it also suppresses weeds if you put it thick enough.
Oh, it does suppress weeds.
Yes, it does.
Okay. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. We're coming up on about 13 minutes before 1 o'clock. I want to let you know this is a two-hour show. So if you've got questions and you want to call in, we're going to be here till 2 o'clock with Jeff Anderson with the New Mexico State University Extension Office if you have questions that you want to ask about what makes your desert garden grow. Let us go to the social media where Michael Kaczmarek has been standing by. Michael, what's going on social media?
Hey, guys. I've got a question here from Lane who says, what varieties of lavender grow well here? Also, he wants to know about echinacea. He says he's had luck with Cherokee Spirit echinacea, and he wants to also know what's the best way to build a raised bed garden.
Okay, three questions.
Three questions. So, first off, I'm going to say lavender does not grow very well here. It's a difficult plant to grow. We generally get too hot, and then you have the moisture in the summer, so you get hot and wet. And that's not what lavender likes. It's a Mediterranean plant. Now, I know a number of people that will say, well, I grow lavender. Having one lavender plant is not to like do a business. Mm-hmm. So you can keep it alive. Most people, it's 3 to 5 years. If you can get it more than 5 years, you're lucky. But lavender requires at least 80% sand in its mix. So super fast draining soil. And like I said, early on, they'll grow vigorously and they'll be nice. And then they get older and moisture gets trapped and then they rot. So that's one question. The other question.
What was your second question, Michael?
He wanted to know about echinacea.
Echinacea. So echinacea, again, it's generally a prairie plant or up higher in the mountains. So you won't find it growing out in the desert here. But if you're growing it, it's kind of the same thing. You know, you can grow for a number of years and sometimes it rots out. Now, I noticed that's generally in the valley because we have more clay in the soil. If you're in sandier soils, I've seen the same plants just absolutely thrive there as long as they have sufficient moisture. And I believe echinacea is that plant. It likes those sandy, well-drained soils like that.
Raised garden bed. That's the third question.
Raised garden beds. Building them again?
Yes, building them again.
Okay, raised garden beds. Use sturdy materials.
Well, my question is, and, you know, I've seen some raised garden beds. Doesn't the water affect the wood and cause it to rot?
The water can affect the wood and cause it to rot. So, you know, after a certain time period, like if you use Pecky cedar, maybe it's a long time. It could be 15 years where you're going to have to replace it. Or, you know, another thing you can do is buy horse troughs, either the plastic ones or the metal ones. Make sure you drill holes in the bottom for drainage. Then you don't have to worry about building something. You just put it in place and fill it up with the soil you want to use.
Where can you find those?
Horse and Hound.
Horse and Hound, that's right.
Tractor Supply, number of places around town.
Okay. 575-646-2212. Let us go to our phone line. Doreen, you are on with Jeff Anderson on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind, Doreen?
Hey, I want to say thanks to Jeff first. I'm taking a lot of notes.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Are there really any deer-resistant plants up here in Silver City that we can use?
I have a list in my office. I'd have to check what that is. Of course, you're up in Silver City. It's a little different than here. So I know oleanders deer don't eat, but they don't really grow up in Silver City either. So I'd have to check with the list. And generally what I do, and I'd work with the agent up there, but you look at plants from like the Midwest that are deer resistant. You know, if we don't have a list, generally you can find a university with a deer resistant plant from the Midwest, because it's very similar to here, what they're going to eat and what you're going to landscape with. As for native plants, that would be, I'd have to discuss and look, see what that would be.
Do I have one more quick question? In Silver City, do you know what zone we're in? What planting zone?
I would say that you, based on what I know up there, you're in a zone 7. And so we're in a zone 8, and you're a zone 7. You're very similar to us, but a little colder.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I love this show.
What kind of success have you had, Doreen, with plants in Silver City?
All the herbs do well up here. And cherry tomatoes, you were right, because the big tomatoes don't make it. Zucchinis, garlic.
Can you do rhubarb peppers there?
Have you tried rhubarb? Have you tried rhubarb?
No, but that sounds great.
Yeah, we can't grow it in Cruces. It's not cold enough in the winter, but you might be at the right temperature there, some places.
And strawberries are great.
Strawberries. Mm-hmm. Okay, Doreen, thank you for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. We are on till 2 o'clock, so continue taking notes until 2 o'clock. There will be a quiz. No, there won't be a quiz. Thanks, Doreen. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Karen, you are on with Jeff Anderson. What's on your mind, Karen?
Well, good afternoon, and thanks for helping us.
No problem. What's on your mind?
And I've got, okay, I did zero scaping in my yard. I'm at about 4,500 feet, Elephant Butte Lake. When I planted my cottonwood tree, when the landscaping was put down, they have the plastic, and then they put the rocks. And this kind of plastic that was put down doesn't aerate, and the water doesn't go through. So my cottonwood tree that was planted in the middle of that.
Hang on 1 second. Okay, there you go. All right, we lost Doreen. No, there you go. You're on, Doreen. Karen.
Okay.
Karen.
So the tree that I planted in the middle of those rocks that are xeriscaped, it's got an orange mold, like fungus, on the north side of it. My question is, because the trees are planted where the xeriscaped rocks are with the plastic underneath it, are they the roots getting molded possibly from all that plastic that's around it? Should I not do that in the xeriscaping where the plastic is, where all the rocks are, and then the tree in the center of it? Do you think possibly that could be the problem?
So just to let people know, plastic in Las Cruces, at least, is outlawed in under rock.
And why?
Because it doesn't allow air and moisture to go through it. So they're using the fabrics. But in most cases, if you put a sufficient rock layer on there, so if you were using rock or any other kind of mulch, if it's 4 to 6 inches deep, that'll suppress the weeds and help out. So what's going on there is that your tree, how old is your tree?
5 years.
5 years.
It's slowly dying on me. Every year there's more die-off, and now it's got this orange fungus on it. And it's a shame. It's about a 30-foot tree, and I'm losing it.
I would not suspect that the plastic would do that. Generally, especially with a cottonwood, the cottonwood's roots are pretty vigorous. It depends on how much moisture is under that plastic, if it's saturated or if it's dry. But if it's got orange on the base of the tree, that sounds like a fungus infection.
It's going all up and just on the north side of it. So, okay. All right, so the plastic doesn't seem underneath that.
Yeah,
would
if
you
think
the tree is getting enough water when it rains, the plastic is repelling the water and going off, and I have the PVC pipe at the tree down into the earth, so when I water, it's getting water that way.
Okay, that's not the drip, is it? You said PVC.
Oh, not PVC. A drip. No, I put the hose into it. Yeah.
Okay. So you don't want to keep water on the trunk of the tree because that will encourage fungus to grow. So it causes the base to rot. So you want to water out away from the tree to at least the drip line or farther out because that's where the absorbing roots are. So you need to probably move that away from the tree, start getting water out towards farther out away from the tree, at least towards the canopy. But you can cut into the plastic because you need to look underneath there and see how dry it is or how wet it is. But
all right.
If you can remove the plastic any time in the future, that's always the best thing that you can do.
I can't. It's like a quarter-acre lot of river stones with plastic under.
Sometimes people go through with a pitchfork and punch holes in their spading fork.
Oh, that's a good idea. That would help then for absorbing for the plants around.
Right. It helps get some water in and some air exchange.
All right, Karen, thank you very much.
Then.
Good luck.
Okay.
Call us back in the fall and let us know how it went. 575-646-2212. If you want to call in, we are going to go to the news at 101. So if you want to call in right now and get on the list of calls for people to join us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential, Jeff Anderson is our guest. He is here to answer your gardening questions on what makes your desert garden grow. So far, we've covered raised gardens and
some vegetables.
So
palms.
Let me ask you about a tree that I first discovered in New Mexico, and that's the Mexican elder.
Okay.
It's very popular, but it's also can be very weak with winds.
Right. So most elderberries plants are herbaceous. They're not woody trees at all. They're just shrubby plants. So, yeah, Mexican elder is a very weak-wooded tree. When I first moved here, I thought it was so beautiful because we moved here in March.
They're beautiful.
It was all
shaped.
Green
yes.
and beautiful and the bark. And then after you live here a while, then you notice that there are problems. If you get a late snow and the whole tree breaks or, you know, as it gets older, the inside, it's like balsam wood. It just gets kind of hollow and it's very light wood and it could break at any time. And then they have two dormancy periods. They go dormant in the early fall or late fall going into early winter. And so they drop leaves then. And then in the summer when it gets too hot and too dry, they'll drop leaves then. And they drop berries too. So you don't want to plant it by your door because then you'll have purple berry stains on things and that. So there are some problems. But if you put it off to the side where you can enjoy its look, especially in the spring and the fall in the cooler season, they are really pretty.
Are they native to New Mexico or where are they native to?
They are native to the Rio Grande River Valley here.
Okay. 575-646-2212. We're going to go to the news in just one moment. Let's talk about, again, how do you go about, do you put a drip system in a raised garden?
Yeah, that's a really good thing to do. If you're doing a raised garden, because it gets hot in the summertime, you don't always want to go out there and water when the plant needs water because you're going, it's too hot, I don't want to go outside, but the plant needs water right now. So having it on a drip system ensures that you're getting consistent water if you set it up right and you have it timed right. And then your plants will have neither too much nor too little water, and you'll be able to have a good bountiful harvest.
All right, KRWG's Gardening Confidential is brought to you by Fun Country RV and Marine. Lithium batteries on RVs as standard equipment, continuous operation with solar, lithium packages for campers, batteries provide a 15-year lifespan. El Paso RV Show March 15th through the 17th at the El Paso Convention Center. This is KRWG Las Cruces, KRXG Silver City. We are broadcasting live from the beautiful campus at New Mexico State University. Gardening Confidential, after the news, continues.